Welcome everyone to the very first episode of Classroom to Staff Room. I'm joined by my co-host Jodie Epier.
Hello.
I'm Miles O'Kane and we look forward to taking you along for the ride. Welcome, welcome. Good to see you, my man.
You too, brother.
For everyone listening, so we're currently on the big set of holidays just after Christmas. Not going back to school till just the end of January, which isn't the worst thing in the life. I call it the golden period. It's, you know, all the festive season's done now. You're through the hustle and bustle.
Oh, yeah.
The normal non-teaching folk are back to work. Queues at the lunch lines are going down. It's a beautiful thing.
Oh, I just love it. Love it. Can you smart to my kids having to go to work? They see their father at home. Just chilling out, sleeping until 10 o'clock in the morning. Yeah.
Mate, I'm sick of defending myself to my missus. She's like, surely you can't have this many holidays. I'm like, I've only 10 days in, sweetheart.
Yeah.
It's another 3, 4, 5 weeks to go.
And then I get the questions from a few of the other things. Oh, do you have to go back and do your planning early in the term? I said, no, we're sharp. We do it at the end of the year.
For everyone listening, we're planning 3 hours a day, definitely. Christmas, New Year's, man. What are you up to? Start with Christmas.
Oh, Christmas was good, mate. Just all our kids came back up, had a nice breakfast, put on our breakfast lunch sort of thing, and then ended up making our way down to our in-laws, spent some time with them.
Your plan of attack for buying presents, man. You're a presents buyer.
Oh, no.
Sitting down there planning weeks in advance.
No way. My missus, man, far out. Well, she says, oh, we got to get something for the kids. Oh, okay, let's go. So we just sort of go around, and I sort of just walk near her. She'll find out what the kids want, bro, and that's it, done.
X marks the spot, hey?
Yeah.
It's not a bad move. New Year's, up to much?
New Year's, we just spent it at home and then church again.
Yep.
We done the night before. We went to church at 10 o'clock at night, yep. Saw in the New Year. Went home and then started spending time with family. That's practically the whole day.
I know I'm getting old now, man, so 38 this year. Got to about 9 p.m. on New Year's Day. New Year's Eve, sorry. And then straight to bed. Happiest I've been in years, mate. Just embracing that mature life. But I'll tell you what, man, the years are going quicker and quicker these days. Like, I think, so I'm 15 years in teaching now. What are you?
22, 23?
Yeah. Like, it feels like a while. It doesn't feel like 15 years, though. Like, kind of, I think back to sort of graduate days, I'm like, that's gone way too fast. You know, I used to sit there when I first started teaching, think about teachers that have been teaching, and good on them, for 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like a long time. Well done. I'm not sure if I could do it, but the more, like yourself, man, don't get me wrong, I do love teaching, but it's just like time creeps up and you're kind of like, what the hell's going on?
I look back, if I reminisce back into my first years of teaching, I'm thinking, man, I was so worried about making sure I had everything down to the minute today,
yeah.
You know, making sure all the planning is everything there. But as time has progressed, I've sort of got to the point where I've been a lot more familiar with teaching. You sort of understand what needs to happen and then you sort of ease off a little but you know the content really well.
Veteran in the game now,
yeah,
mate.
That's it.
Just know it all.
That's it. You just sort of roll with it. But it's always nice to go reflective and go back and have a look at your practice and then fix up the areas where you sort of lack stuff or bring things back that you haven't sort of done before or in a while.
I agree with that, man. I think one of the most powerful tools in teaching is being reflective. Oh. And like there's plenty of times I do it where it takes sort of a genuine honesty to look into your soul. Absolutely. And go, what do I need to do better? But it's very powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think being around other teachers or people who have good influence, that's another area where what I would strongly recommend either young teachers or any teachers, or, you know, mix up with really experienced teachers, bring in the new ones.
Yep.
That way you sort of keep sharpening yourself just to make sure that you're on top of what you're doing. So that's how I think.
Full of inspiration, episode one, mate. Love it. Very good. So I'm thinking for the focus for this episode, being that it's the start of a new year, and we sort of reflect back, look at the current landscape of teaching. I think, especially with both of us been around for a bit now, I think it'd be good to sort of see what we're going through in teaching at the moment for ourselves.
Yeah.
I think the best place to start with this is to take a deeper look at what it was like teaching during COVID. We've got hopefully the worst behind us now. What do you reckon?
Yeah, that thing's still sort of lingering around apparently. But yeah, hopefully the worst of it is gone. But it definitely threw a spanner in the works, that thing.
Well, I think that's the way to do it, man. I think let's go back and have a look at sort of the initial days of COVID when it broke out. What do you think? What was going through you in your teaching world?
Well, when COVID was a thing and it started to become a thing, I think it was brand new. The whole concept was brand new in a sense. And everybody was like caught with their pants down sort of thing. They didn't really take it.
Just like straight in reaction mode.
Definitely. It was almost like, oh, it's here. Oh, geez. Oh, it's a real thing.
Definitely happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then once the panic buttons got hit, then everybody got put into their positions and stuff. I think COVID did throw a big curveball, though, to all of the teaching fraternity in the sense that we had to then prep for work online. We had to then prep for teaching via technology.
Yeah.
It was a whole different ball.
Yeah. I think, like the rest of the world, I think that having that uncertainty,
yeah,
you just never know, do you? Like, you do your best to stay calm and composed in the situation, but everyone, the whole world's in chaos. You're doing your best to sort of day by day, I mean, not only educate the future generation, but sort of look after their well-being as well. I know for me, sort of the first staff meeting, I guess, so the whole staff got together best they could without whatever the restrictions were back then. A lot of panic in people's eyes. I think the teaching professions is pretty resilient. I think people do their best not to show up. It's sort of a lot of wild eyes sort of looking back at you and everyone's talking at 1.5 speed and doing their best to sort of cut the nerves out. But there was a lot of anxiety going on. I mean, I think for me, it's been the toughest time in teaching. But yeah, I mean, I think it was not the knowing as well. I think all the different point of views coming in, the constant uncertainty, it was just, sort of, it was a lot on the plate for the teacher at the time, like a lot of other professions as well, not trying to single teachers out, but it was a hard time to get through.
I look at when it first hit that wave, the department kicked into its whatever it needed to do, and then you started seeing all these cleaners having to clean constantly throughout the day, and then masks had to be worn.
Oh, big shout out to, I forgot about that, man, the cleaners of the schools, thank you so much for your effort. Oh, but not only so they're going through and doing everything to protect us, all the cleaners I came across were so enthusiastic, so helpful, so positive.
Yeah.
I'm like, you guys are awesome.
And then once the initial fear mongering started to lessen and kids were starting to allow to come back to school, because I think parents at the time had the right or had some sort of power of keeping their kids at home because of it. And then once that stronghold started to break and kids started to come back, there was still that sense of fear. Both even for, when I looked at some of the older staff that we work with, the fear in there, not, I shouldn't say fear, but like
the anxiety. They're
more susceptible to getting that sort of a
thing. So. And on that as well, I think you've been in the trenches with staff day in and day out. Yeah. You definitely bond a lot with those people, a lot with the people around you. Right. And you're seeing them going through a hard time together. You're in there together. You got to help one another.
That's right.
You know, you help one another. The rising tide rises all the boats, whatever the saying is. But I think it's looking out for one another as well, which I found was a weird benefit. Not a weird benefit, a benefit that came out of the time, just those strengthened relationships with your colleagues.
Oh, I agree. I totally agree. Like, as you say, from that disaster or that chaos, it did actually pull us closer together.
Yeah.
And in doing so, you know, you actually got to know each other a lot better, and then the compassion to help one another when someone is out or someone is feeling sick or whatever, that ability for us to pull together without asking questions, it just naturally
occurred. Yeah. One of the harder points for me during the time was obviously teacher relief. Just touch on the point with staff being out. I mean, that was a crazy thing, because you've got not only is a staff shortage in West Australia wide, it's been for a while now, but you've got a world pandemic, people are sick, we're teaching a hard to staff school, so teachers are coming and going relief wise. A lot of the burden for people's relief fell on teachers at the time.
Yes.
Talk me through that, man. How do you find that experience?
Oh, very much so. When that started to happen, when we had to start covering for other teachers because of whatever else, whatever the reasons. Like, you can tell the ones that are there to band together, which was good. There were some that sort of said, right, the first main focus is that we make sure that the teaching continues, make sure that the kids are looked after. But then the things that go on behind the scenes, stuff that you had to try and control, in the sense of relief teachers not showing up, or teachers don't want to be teaching certain classes, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, so the ability to think on the spot.
Yep.
I think that's a great thing.
Yep.
To have a leader that can actually think on the spot and troubleshoot straight away without having to go through all these different levels of anxiety or whatever else, it's just straight bang, this is what we're going to do. And I think the cool thing was the assertiveness and just the clarity that you gave us throughout that time was good.
I appreciate it, man. I live my life by troubleshooting. A lot of trial and error, man. A lot of the time, there's a lot of error, to be honest. But that's going to be, you know, another talking point throughout the episodes. But I think learning through failure and making mistakes is key. And I mean, that's something, like yourself, I like to get across in my classrooms, is just to, you're going to fail, you're going to make mistakes, but it's pick yourself up and go again
right.
and go from there. How do you think the students dealt with COVID at the time?
I thought the students that are academically strong,
yep,
I think they continued as per.
Mm-hmm.
I think the students that weren't as strong, I think they happy that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not happy, but ran with it, that the fact that they could not come, don't have to come to school.
I remember talking to the first lot of students that had to isolate, and they got back after the week, or was it a week or the 2 weeks, or the week isolation, yeah, whatever it was. Man, that was like living in a five-star holiday resort for them. I thought, here I was thinking that it'll be like panic stricken, freaking out, being locked in the rooms. Like, sir, we sat there, got meals delivered, checked all our devices, lived the dream. Yeah. Don't know why I'm back at school.
Exactly.
Got to change your life as well. But it's, man, they did what they could to do. I mean, I think after a while, that withdrawal, I think in the isolation, I can start to see it even now with students are sort of coming back and a bit more timid with sort of how they're approaching stuff and maybe just readjusting to the world. But I mean, my experience, man, most of the students came back, got through, and they were probably more resilient than I thought they'd be, to be honest, as a whole, which is good to see.
I look at some of the instances that I saw with some of the students. Some students came back in, they were happy to be back because they reckon sitting inside four walls, they started to go a little bit doolally and couldn't understand why I couldn't go outside and so forth.
There's only so much Call of Duty you can play. But it is,
exactly. But when they came back to school, they appreciated the fact that, I think what it was also a reality check to show that this COVID thing that hit the world, it wasn't something to be mucked around with. It wasn't something to sort of like, oh, you know. And once it started saying, oh, my family member got this, my family got done by that, my family got done by that, that's when I think a lot of them started to think, oh, geez.
There's a bit to this.
Yeah.
Definitely a bit to this. I think that was, in a way, there was a positive, man. So you got to take a little bit of time off the curriculum each lesson and sort of look at student well-being, which I know I can be guilty at times, sort of just expecting kids to rock up and everything's going well.
Yeah.
Even though in the back of my mind, I know, you know, we're complex beings as humans. But I think as you sort of able to sit down and as a whole class or groups of students, just sort of check in with how students are going, how they're coping, how they're holding up, which definitely made me more disciplined in doing that. Something I want to continue on, hopefully now that we're getting out of COVID.
I agree with that whole concept of, sometimes as teachers, we're so focused on wanting to make sure that the curriculum is pushed and delivered so well.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we also forget that these kids are just kids. They're like 13, 14, 15, 16, 17
so young. Year olds.
They're young minds. So sometimes we look at overlook pastoral care and thinking, but if you really build that relationship strong enough with that kid or with those kids, you can go wherever you want to go and they will follow.
Definitely.
Those sorts of things.
Definitely. I remember being told when I was going through my dip ed, and one of the lecturers at the time said, no one or no student's going to learn from someone they don't like. Now, I'm not saying that you have to go and be all about Mr. and Mrs. Popular, but there needs to be some kind of, relationship of trust there to start with.
Yeah.
And you have to earn that trust as well. Yes. I think teachers can mistake at time just going in and thinking they're in a position that needs to be respected in society, correct, which it should be, but there also needs to be both parties, teachers and students, come to the middle ground and sort of work on trust. And you're right, once you get those relationships down with individual students, you can do a whole lot of good things.
And as you say, like education from yesteryears, it was, as soon as you walked in the classroom, the teacher was the authoritarian, that was it, bang.
Mm-hmm.
But now that time has changed, teachers have now got to be able to, it's like juggling, be able to hold all these different students with all their different baggages that they bring into school and making sure that they get getting the best out of them in whatever situation, whatever season they're in.
Yeah.
So it's that. So when you look at being a teacher, it's not just the curriculum that you're teaching.
So much going on.
So much going on.
I love that when I talk. I don't love it. It frustrates the hell out of me when I talk to... You said when I first started teaching, it drive me insane, man, talking to non-teaching folk. They're like, you get like 12 weeks holiday a year. Dude, you see what we do. And you see what we do during the day.
Yeah.
And holidays will mean nothing to you. But it used to frustrate me because then I couldn't explain what I did during the day. I do all this stuff. It seems like a lot going on.
Yeah.
It is a lot, and then just I crash during the holidays.
All they see is the 12-week holidays. You guys are so lucky, you guys got all these holidays.
Yep. I'm crashed for the long holidays, I crash for three quarters. Short holidays, I crash for most of it. On the flip side of that, with looking at teacher well-being during COVID, how do you think teachers, I guess as a collective or the teachers around us at the time, handle it?
I think, well, I've got to take my hat off to the admin staff in the sense they came in quite supportive and saying to teachers, if you don't feel safe, so forth, which is good because it's showing that they actually care for the staff, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think in general, most teachers took it seriously in the sense of we just got to make sure that we're doing everything and abiding by whatever we need to abide by.
Yeah.
And should something happen, make sure we're following those procedures. And I think majority of the staff that got done by COVID and they did follow the procedures, everything was, you know, as per.
Yep.
I suppose it's just that residue that's still stuck around, that residual sort of stuff that it's still lingering here and there, having to constantly check, yep, do all the checks and all that stuff. So.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think everyone that we were around, and I know of in our small community, I think it handled it really well, and I think we're very supportive during a tough time. And I think what makes it harder, you don't know exactly what's going to happen. You got less than a likely chance that you know what the outcome's going to be. I think everyone, you know, true characters came out. As I think from what I saw, teachers handled it very well, and not just from where we're at, but I think across the state, across the nation. I don't know if you want to go across the world as well, but it seemed like, I mean, it just shows you how resilient teachers are.
And I take my hat off to those teachers that also have young kids, because they have no control of what they do, but to a certain extent. But if their kids get COVID, then they too have to take that time. So the school was quite, I think I love the fact that if something happened within the family structure, there was no real sort of, you didn't feel like you, oh, I have to go home now or whatever else. It was like, no, you go and deal to that first. I think that was a good.
Very supportive, wasn't it? No, I agree. So I think, as we're saying at the top of the episode, with both us being around in the teaching game for a bit now, I think, I mean, definitely a fair bit's changed. So let's put COVID aside now. What's the biggest changes you've seen since you've started in the teaching industry to now?
Oh, if you talk to one of our mates, it'll be the chalk and the chalkboard.
I miss that, which I, everyone in society around me and my students are stoked about, because my handwriting's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think technology has now become a huge part of teaching.
Yep.
Just the mediums that we're teaching for kids to learn now, it's more interactive. I think a lot of the kids' attention spans are shortened because of it.
Definitely.
Because they want it instantaneously, they want it now.
Yep.
The long haul, in the sense of learning how to research, learning how to just sit and read, maybe just to find information. A lot of it is fingertips now.
Definitely. With the attention spans, can you put like a year on it? Like I know for Mel, like I noticed when phones first came in, when I was teaching, probably 5 or 6, 7 years ago, and I don't know, like a year 7 or 8 should to hand over a phone, and just the reaction was like, no, you're not getting this phone. But it was unhealthy. I was like, whoa, that's for me when it kicked off. Like this is a whole new world. Dealing with technology now and the addiction.
It's like you're asking them for their right hand.
Yeah.
Hand it over, please, now.
And it was weird, man, as well, because I knew about it, I'd read about it, and I'd heard about it. But to see it right in front of me and just the reaction the student was as if, like, I would give and you're right, I'll cut off body parts now instead of taking my phone. I was like, this is getting nuts. Like, this is, and it's only getting worse as well. And I find that, like, I personally did my best to not get any iOS devices until like 3 or 4 years ago, man. Since I got an iPhone, I'm like, it got me.
Yeah.
I'm going to work my backside off now just to limit my screen time and stuff. I'm a 38-year-old, you know, adult, supposedly. You got little 10 to 18-year-old school students coming through. Good luck to them. It's hard to face.
Technology is meant to help us become better, but in the sense it has, but it's also made us a lot lazier in the sense that we rely on it so often. You know, I remember growing up as a young fella having to learn multitudes of things, and you don't get the options of using a computer to find any of that information. You just sort of have to read it and memorize it, write notes.
Talk to people.
Yeah, talk to people.
Remember those, hey? Talking to people. Concept.
Yeah.
I agree, man. So me, when I started teaching, there wasn't much. Screen time wasn't a thing. It was still, I think it was still MySpace and Facebook had come in.
Yes.
So
yes.
Going back in the archives now. And then the gaming was the first thing that I started to notice a change. I think with mental health is definitely
on the rise.
It's more prevalent now, but it's definitely more talked about as well. I think a lot of that for me started kicking off with the gaming, with students, especially high school students, locking themselves, not locking themselves, but sort of being in their rooms for hours and hours on end. Like, it's no good. You know, you get a bit different around social interactions. I was seeing the students a bit more drawn and stuff, and then they sort of get deeper and deeper into these worlds. And I'm not saying it's the entire reason for mental health, but I think it's that coupled with then the evolution of screen time technology. It definitely had an impact.
It's definitely a contributor towards it, though. And you look at the amount of time that they're spending from. When I look back when I'm, and they probably hear their parents say back when I was, and that's a common thing that they hear a lot of.
Yep.
But you have a look at the times have changed in the sense that some parents aren't parenting how they were parented, in the sense that, you know, a lot of time was spent talking, a lot of time was spent teaching them how to do things around the house, taking them places. Now, throw them in front of a TV, give them a device, and they'll entertain themselves with, until they get hungry and they come out and want to feed. So it's one of those things where you sort of, technology is meant to be helpful, and it is, but at the same time, there's certain parts of technology where I think it's really made a huge impact in a negative way. That it stopped the kids from interacting, like that anxiety. As you say, things like anxiety have gone through the roof now. Kids today,
social anxiety,
struggle to just have a conversation. I'll raise this question to kids: when you go on a bus or when you go on a train, do you have a conversation with people? They go, no, I'll just sit on my phone. I said, so you sit on your phone like everybody else on the thing. I'll talk to you, and if you don't want to talk to me, I'm going to make you talk to me, because I'll keep asking you questions. And it's, I said, the human things are being lost, the ability to actually talk.
Connection
to
is huge. Human connection, or connection within our community is huge, man. Yeah, definitely, I agree. And it's, you kind of feel like you become, as part of a teacher, you become teaching those social skills as well at times, which we probably took for granted growing up, or at least our parents demonstrated the importance to us. I find that. The other thing, you're right, with terms of the changes, over the time, everything went digital as well. I remember, so first started teaching, it's still common to hand over like physical files of courses at the end of the year. Whereas now, if you're doing that, you're kind of looking at the person all right, this isn't early 2000s, late 90s. But I think it's helped, like someone who's a little bit extreme with organization like myself, I definitely appreciate everything being accessible and everything, you know where it is. I missed out by a year. So I did my first 2 years on the blackboard, did my first 2 years in the country. And then when I got positioned back down in Perth, the classroom I was going to have was having its blackboard taken out over the holidays. And I was 2 years in, finding it hard enough to write with a whiteboard marker. Like anything to do with chalk would have driven me insane. So I missed out on the blackboard. Some other teaching friends around that time got to experience the blackboard. I mean, a person with your impeccable standards, mate, would have been impressive with it. But I don't miss it at all.
Oh, the coloured chalk, mate. You can make your board look so amazing.
I've seen your board work. It's very impressive. Your board work is very impressive. Student learning, how I know, so the big emphasis, and still is a little bit, starting out, was collaborative learning, and so investigative learning for students, which is still, I think, especially being math teachers, I think that investigative learning is important, and the problem solving and the trial and error approaches, whereas it seems like the last 5 or so years, it's taken a swing back to more explicit direct instruction stuff, and just, I don't know if it's rote learning, but heavily structured, timed pieces of work to keep students on track.
Well, that's just a result of what's been coming through. And I think that's due to the impact of what technology has done, what society has done. How before you would be scared to step out of line back in those days. Nowadays, kids don't care. And, you know, it's almost like I'm saying there's not that fear of the teachers all removed. And, but see, it wasn't a negative fear. It was the fear of stuffing upstairs, fear of whatever else. But then when you have a look at today's kids, there's a huge fear of just failing now. That whole just wanting to, if I don't try, then I didn't fail. So a lot of kids, you're having to build up their confidence. That's one of the big things that a lot of kids coming through, especially to the younger grades, they're lacking confidence in this ability, and they think that everything is too hard. But as we teach and as we say, you know, if everybody knew everything, it would be the best thing in the world. But you've got to go from the very beginning and bring them back through to a point where they can just go get pushed out of the nest.
Got to have that journey, don't they? Definitely. So I think the final point on that, so things that remain consistent, man, students still rocking up the class with nothing. Like nothing. But they all have like the latest version of iPhones. Can't bring a pencil.
Latest shoes, and they can't even play the game.
All the Guernseys. But it's, that still spins me out. Like, I know, it's just rock up, just nothing, just wearing the school clothes.
And it's almost at the point where I think even schools are sort of just caving into it, like just accept the fact that that's just what our community's like. So to overcome that, we'll just provide them with everything. But the accountability of, you know, your education, and I don't know if a lot of people value it enough of today's society, because you have a look at few of the kids that are coming through, come to school, as you say, with nothing. They rock up with nothing, expect to get given something, and yet at the end when you get told them to file it away, sometimes they don't file it away. It's It's this whole mentality towards education as a whole. How am I going to benefit by coming to school? That's some of the questions that's probably going to be asked at some point.
I think it teaches that accountability, doesn't it? Like, I think back to when I was in school, like, I know I didn't have a heap of stuff, but I always had a pen or pencil. I remember going through my teaching, so dip head, there's a guy there who every time we'd talk about, like, bringing stuff to class, he'd always go back to his time, and, like, I never picked up a pen and I did all right. So every time, like, I look at my kid, like, I look at the students in class who are borrowing a pencil, I'm like, you may be the genius amongst us. You're like, hey, the teachers are pretty smart too, but I'm like, it's just, you know, you never know. Like, I hope you are, but if not, let's have the backup plan of bringing a pencil to class. And possibly an eraser. The other thing I think that's remained consistent is the teaching. The job's hard, man. The job is hard. And I think being able to, especially if any young graduates are out there listening or early teachers, be able to balance your energy.
That's right.
There's only a finite amount of energy. And I think teachers being good people, you know, it can be hard to say no to taking things on at time.
Yes.
But that can get out of control as well. And I don't think people are trying to take advantage of people, but you end up taking more and more on. And before you know it, like, it's just getting out of control. I think to be, like, I've learned over time, to be more effective at the job is to just set hours.
Yep.
So once I leave the school premises for the day, I don't think, like, it's a discipline, but I don't think about teaching. Like, it's done. And that makes me more effective the next day, as I've just got that finite amount of time to focus on teaching.
I'm exactly the same. I made a rule. I gave myself a rule. I can't remember how far back, but I said to myself, when I leave school, I don't take anything home. I leave everything at school that needs to be left. If I can't get it done in that day, there's always another day tomorrow. And what you're talking about with young teachers coming on board, that enthusiasm is great, but also channel that enthusiasm in making sure that you do the things that you've been asked to do them extremely well. And then building blocks from there, add on another part that you want to help out in, then do that really well. Now you've done two things really well. Don't say yes to everything.
Don't make teaching your everything, which is hard. I think, you know, as I said, like, we're caring people by nature teachers. You just want to do best by everyone. All right, man. So we're coming to the end of episode one. Any concluding remarks?
Oh, look, I think there has to be a voice out there for this has to be a medium there for teachers all around the world. If anything, like, as we saw, the perception out there is that teachers get these wonderful holidays, and that's all it's all about. But
how hard can it be? Oh, exactly. 12 weeks holidays a year.
How hard
you
is
finish
it?
At 3:01. Mate, I'm bus duty.
Dealing with 30 kids with all different types of issues going on, and
no
making
pencils.
Sure learning is learning.
But yeah, that's all right. That's exactly right. I know I'm not trying to pick on non-teaching folk, but you feel like just come into my class, follow me around for a day, see what we do, and then if you still feel like what you're saying is correct, or you feel what you go by it, but at least have some understanding of what teachers are doing out there.
Yes, I think the other thing they can think, if they've got kids, multiply your one kid by 30, and with all the different types of things that are going on in their minds.
Yep.
And have them for nine to three. And see how being with that one kid multiplied by 30.
And then every hour changing as well. Sometimes you're doubled up, sometimes you don't.
And then you get a new batch coming through next hour.
There's a lot happening in that world. All righty, team. Well, that's a wrap. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to my brother, Jody Epia.
Awesome, brother. Thank you.
And we look forward to catching you all in the next episode.
Nice one.